Welcome to Luminate, navigating the unknown through creative leadership. I'm Sarah Hempstead, a leader in creative problem solving, principal in charge at Schmidt Associates. And today I'm joined by Latoya Pitts, the creative CEO of Christomore House Family and Community Center in Indianapolis. A lifelong resident of the Hallville neighborhood, Latoya was introduced to Christomore House around the age of 7. Benefiting from programs such as homework assistance, arts and crafts, ballet, college visits, and taking in the city's museums, Latoya credits Christomore House with giving her the solid foundation that led her to where she is today. In her adult years, she joined the board of directors, and in 2018, she became Christomore House's executive director and CEO. In this episode, we'll discuss Latoya's experience building strong communities, her leadership perspective, and her path to leading this important institution. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
No, this is going to be great. So it is rare that a leader of an institution actually grew up in the neighborhood and experiencing the institutions. Can you start with maybe giving us a little bit of context of little baby Latoya and how you first experienced that space and place?
Great question. So I grew up in Hallville. My grandmother lived directly across the street from Christomore House my entire life. My family actually still owns that house, and then the house directly next door that my uncle lives in. A little bit of history about me. My mom was a teen parent, so I'm the product of a teenage mom. And although statistics say that I should not be successful, I should not be a leader, I should not definitely have gone to college and graduated, my family and the Christomore House helped me break all of those barriers. So for after school, my bus would pull up, I would get off the bus, go in my grandmother's house, have my snack, watch a little bit of Channel 8 news, watch a little bit of the stories. And then I would go across the street to Christomore House where I would get homework help, because you did not hear me say I did homework in my grandma's house.
We ate snacks
and we watched TV. And then I went to the Christomore House where I got help with my homework and I got to hang out with friends and people my own age. And some of my best childhood friendships were developed at Christomore House. My childhood friend group I met when I was in third grade, 8 years old, and those women and I are still friends. We're well into our 40s. We've experienced marriages together. We've lost parents together. We've got college degrees, master's and doctoral degrees. We run businesses. And so those foundations and those friendships were made right at Christomore House. So it's definitely full circle for me.
So having a cohort like that of friends and supporters that by and large, we're all successful and moved on to higher education and important things would lead me to believe that there were really strong advocates and mentors at Christomore House for you.
Absolutely. When you're a kid, you don't necessarily realize maybe the things that are building you for the future. You don't realize, oh, this is actually difficult. This is teaching me resilience. This is teaching me advocacy. And so when I was a kid, I didn't realize those things. Christomore House was just a fun place for me to be. But really what I was learning was resilience. I was learning what it means to pour back into a community that's poured into you. I was learning what friendship means. I was learning just what grant writing was and didn't know that I was learning what grant writing was, what that looked like. And so for me, I feel like that cohort was really important. And I feel like the friend group and my family making sure that I had that safe space to hang out and be a kid and go on college tours. Those are the types of things that Christomore House taught me at an early age. My first college tour experience. Now, my family always talked about college. It was never, are you going? It was always a conversation, where are you going? Mm-hmm. Where are you going to college at and what are you majoring in? And Christomore House actually took me on college tours. And once my feet stepped foot onto a college campus, I knew this is real and this is where I'm going to be. And I didn't necessarily know like how I would learn all those things and then be able to come back and pour them into Christomore House. But those are the things that I learned. And they are definitely a ground principle foundation of who I am as a person and definitely how I am as a leader.
I want to get into college in Indiana State in particular. But before we do that, for people who don't know the neighborhood of Hallville, for people who don't know the Christomore House at all, can you give a little bit of context in your experience in the last 30 years about that place?
Yep. So that place is a place in a very low income area in the city of Indianapolis. Hallville has high crime rates. Hallville has low graduation rates. Hallville has. It's now evolved into a more mixed community. But when I grew up, there were the working class African-American black families. There were no Hispanic families. There were very few Caucasian families. I lived in a predominantly black neighborhood that was mixed with my grandparents who were both married. My mom grew up in a two-parent household. Both of my grandparents worked. And majority of the neighbors on their street did as well. So they were homeowners in that block of the neighborhood. But then on the very next street, there were families that were renting houses. They were receiving Section 8. They were on food stamps. And so my neighborhood was definitely considered a low income, poor neighborhood, low education, which is why Crystal Moore House held the special place in my heart that it did, because it basically gave you the resources to combat all of those things. It leveled the playing field during that time.
What do you think led your parents to flip the script to say, when you go to college, where are you going to college? When are you going to college?
So I am definitely not a first generation college student. A lot of people think that because I grew up in a low income, poor neighborhood and my mom was a teen parent that I am a first generation college student. And I wasn't. My family had college degrees. My family, I had great aunts that taught at HBCUs, Jackson State University. So I grew up in a family where education was always important.
Awesome.
So that is the foundational piece that I think a lot of people kind of misunderstand. I lived in a poor neighborhood. I lived in a low educated neighborhood. My family did not meet that typical stereotype. We weren't rich, but we weren't necessarily struggling every day either.
Got it.
That was just my surroundings. And that was my group of that's where we lived. That's where we resided. That's what most of my life, for the most part, looked like. But education was never an option in my family.
It was a priority.
It was a priority.
So you're going on college tours with your Crystal Moore House friends. What makes Indiana State stand out as the right place to be?
Okay.
You got to think back to your 17-year-old self.
Oh, no, I remember quite well. Okay. So originally, I was at the teenage stage and my mom and I, now, I was definitely a daddy's girl. So my dad would let me do whatever wanted to do. My mom, because she was a teen parent, was more strict. And so my rules were very strict. And so I was on the, I'm going far to school. I'm going to Jackson State University. I'm going to Grambling State University. I am going outside of Indiana. And then a switch happened. So probably from teen to 16, my mom and I, typical teenage mother-daughter relationship, argued all the time.
Sure, yeah.
I turned 16, 17, and I started to like her again. And I'm assuming at some point she started to like me again, too. Because then we got close again, and I was just like, yeah, no, I'm not going 10 hours. I don't want my mom to have to drive 10 hours. I don't want my dad to have to drive 10 hours to get to me. So I started looking at schools in Indiana, and all of my friends were making other decisions about, oh, I'm going to IU in Bloomington. I'm going to Ball State. I'm going to Butler. I knew Butler was way too close to home. I didn't want to live at home. I wanted a full college experience, and I wanted somewhere where our dollars could stretch. And so that's how I decided on Indiana State. At the time, they had one of the best accounting programs in the state of Indiana. That's how I decided.
So talk about what led you to accounting and business in general.
So I was a cool nerd, if that even makes sense to you.
No, it might not, like, but go ahead. So tell me how you were a cool nerd.
I was
a cool nerd.
So like I was one of the cool kids in school. Everybody wanted to hang around me. My friend group was really popular, but I was really book smart, especially when it came to numbers. So while most teenagers spent their weekends like hanging out, I did that too. But I also was in BPA, which is Business Professionals of America. So at 16 and 17, I spent my weekends doing spreadsheets and competing against other kids in the state of Indiana because I love numbers so much. So that's how I got to become an accounting major.
And then you went on to get your MBA, right? In healthcare management. I might need to cross-check this cool nerd with your siblings. I might have to do a separate podcast.
Definitely.
So then you went on to get your MBA. Did you go directly into not-for-profit with the skills, or you went into the private sector first?
I definitely worked in the private sector first and realized, because I was a cool nerd, accounting might not have. So I had this whole plan. I'm going to major in accounting, right? My accounting advisor was like, you should pick up finance. You should double major, you should, because I was blowing through my accounting classes. I loved it so much. Everything came easy to me except for tax accounting. Lord, be with those people, because that is like serious. The laws change all the time. So typically, if you learn accounting principles, the principles don't change.
Sure.
Some of the rules change, but not very often. Tax accounting changes, I feel like, now quarterly. Depends on whose office dictates what the tax rules are. So anyway, I'm blowing through my accounting classes, and my advisor was like, you should major in finance too, just because you like numbers. Accounting and finance is literally the beginning to the end. So the finance is the beginning piece. The accounting is the end piece. So you understand it the beginning to the end. Terrible advice, because I decided that's what I was going to do, and decided halfway into the finance part of the major, I didn't want that to be my major anymore. Mm-hmm. I declared accounting. I got my associate's degree, and then I double majored in accounting again and business management. So my bachelor's degree is in management and accounting. So I have an associate's in accounting, a bachelor's in accounting, and a bachelor's in management.
Got it.
I went to go work in the private sector. Mm-hmm. I went to go work for, or the public sector. I went to go work for a company called KYB, mm-hmm. manufacturing. They make structs. I was one of their accountants, and realized there that my personality is way too big for daily accounting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know your accountants in this building. They have quirky personalities. I speak their language.
We love them.
You know what I
we
mean?
Love them.
Exactly. And you could not do what you do without them, but they are a different, they are, I look out my window, I like my spreadsheets, I want my door closed. Mm-hmm. They are not the individuals in this building that will be walking through and speaking to everybody, asking everybody how their week. That's just not their typical personality.
Sure.
And so because that is my typical personality, what I was really good at and what I loved at 17 didn't translate into what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So then I started exploring. I have all these business degrees, and where will they best align? Mm-hmm. And so I started volunteering at different places, and that's how I got into the work of social services and realized there's a place for this. I haven't figured it out yet, but there's a place where my accounting and my leadership skills and my bubbly personality can all come together, and I will love my job.
So what brought you back home to Christy Morehouse?
What brought me back home? There was a need. I started volunteering. And when I went to Crystal Morehouse, it was so like full and lively. And the hallways always had like tons of kids, and it felt like so big to me. And then when I came back and volunteered, there were like 8 kids in our after school program. And Hallville hadn't changed that much. The dynamic and the demographics were still pretty much the same. There were still a low income neighborhood, still low education neighborhood. But instead of just being Black students, now they're Brown students, because we have Black families and we have Hispanic families. Mm-hmm. And so now you have a different dynamic of who needs the services at the house. And I felt like those needs weren't being met. And I wasn't sure why. And I felt like for me, the disconnect may have been they don't know this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's fair. You can't get mad. Like, you only know what you know. And when you know better, you do better. And I was just like, okay, I cannot complain, and I have a solution. Mm-hmm. So I joined our board because mm-hmm. I felt like that was the way to make impact. So sure. Not only am I going to volunteer, I'm now going to hold myself accountable. I'm going to join this board. I'm going to place votes that matter. And then it just kept snowballing. And I went from being a board member to being the deputy director, and from the deputy director to becoming the executive director and CEO.
It just pulled you deeper and deeper
in. They just pulled me deeper and deeper in.
So one of the things I'm interested in is the changes that you've implemented at Crystal Morehouse. But before we get to what the changes physically are and different partnerships, maybe let's take it back to the reason why you're there, which is the kids. In your time there, what are the changes that you've seen with the population that you've served? You talked about knowing the neighborhood and a different mix of kids. We've had the pandemic too, right in the middle yep. of right in the middle of your in-depth
right in
running
middle.
Of Crystal Morehouse. So what do you see as the challenges and changes in this next generation?
So the next generation is a little different. The neighborhood is becoming more gentrified now. And so because of that, I wanted to make sure that as we adapt and change, the founders of Crystal Morehouse, yes, was founded in 1905, had a vision that it would always be a staple in that neighborhood and that community. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you have to be willing to change. You have to meet the neighborhood where the neighborhood is.
Sure.
And so I went at a time that tutoring was necessary, after school homework was necessary. And now I'm in an era where technology is necessary. My students can't be equipped. They can't be on level playing fields if I don't have good Wi-Fi in our building, if I don't have access to the highest and the newest computers, because that's what they do. That's school now. I need to make sure that if they're going to game, there's people that game for a living. Mm-hmm. Let me teach my students how to make sure they have access, that if that's what you're going to do, if you're going to sit around and play video games all day, let me teach you how to make money. Let me teach you how to make this a viable, livable option positions so that you can be a contributing member of society. And so I feel like with this generation, like you have to constantly be willing to change. Mm-hmm. You have to meet the neighborhood and the community where they are. Our neighborhood center now, I'm big on health and wellness because I don't want my neighbors to have to drive 20 minutes to go work out. I have a building. I have space. Now, it's definitely not your lifetime fitness, but you can get everything that you need in. We have treadmills. We have free weights. And so it's making small changes mm-hmm. and adapting like that so that the neighbors feel like this is our community center.
That's a great point. The mission of the Kristen Moore House isn't just the littles, right? It's not just the kids. So you're serving the whole neighborhood in a variety of ways.
Absolutely. From 3 to 99 is what I always say. We have an early childhood education, which is our preschoolers. Mm-hmm. We have our after-school kiddos. We have our boxing program. Boxers are from 8 to 26. So we have some young adults mm-hmm. that box as well that are hoping to the minors and they hope to turn into major boxers or go pro. As they would say, we have family strengthening. So that's helping our families find jobs, get better jobs, go back to school, create family life plans on what it looks like for their family life to be successful. Mm-hmm. We take a two-generational approach because I've always been taught that a kid's voice matters, mm-hmm. right? They're living this life too. And so they should be able to have some skin in the game or some stake in what's happening in their life and what their life looks like, how to prepare them and get them to the next level. So that's important. And then our lovely senior citizens who give me a run for my money. Money on a daily basis. Definitely. But we make sure that they are able to be able to have socialization. We make sure that they can get back and forth to doctor's appointments, make sure that they have access to healthy meals. And those things are important because all ages live in the community, not just kids, right? Even though my fondest memories of Kristen Moore House was when I was a kid. Sure. I want to make sure that no matter what the age group is, if this is your neighborhood, this is your center, and you can relate to it in some type of way.
So, and the way you make all of that possible really is partnerships with all sorts of entities, some of which might be unexpected. So one of the coolest ones in recent memory probably is working with the NBA. You want to tell a little bit about that story?
That was fun. That was actually fun. It was work. Everybody saw the like glitz and glamour, but behind the scenes, like it was work. And so we apply for a grant to be the NBA's legacy project. And so every time the NBA does an all-star game in whatever state that they're doing that game in, they pick a legacy project where they invest money. And of course, everybody wants to be the legacy project. So you have schools applying, you have other neighborhood community centers. My colleagues were applying, just a different array of people. And so through a very rigorous application process, Kristen Moore House was selected based off of our, and it was probably like 3 or 4 visits. Every time they would come for a visit, I'd be like, okay, this is the visit that they're going to decide. And they would be like, oh, we love it here, but we're going to bring 4 more people out to see him. We need to. So yes, it was like a long process, but at the end, it was definitely worth it for my community center, just because we got our gym refurbished. Our gym was built in about 1917. Our original building, the auditorium, was built in 1905. The auditorium was our second. Our gym was our second building that was built. So that got new floors. We got 2 new scoreboards. We got new padding. It's amazing now. My backboards go up and down so those 3-year-olds can play and feel like they can dunk as well. Uh-huh. And then they go all the way up to standard so that my big kiddos can feel like they're in a nice gym. So the gym was redone. We got a new wellness room. Our wellness room was remodeled completely. So we have new rubber floors. We have new free weights. We have state-of-the-art equipment. We have a bathroom that was built downstairs for our boxers. We also got an upgrade to our technology lab. And the most important thing was our STEAM lab. So science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Because by spirit, I'm actually a creative. Like I love to create. That's my thing. Crafting is my jam. It just wasn't going to pay my bills. That's why I only do it on the side for fun. But I wanted to make sure that students had a space where they felt like they could be creative. And so there is space to be creative in our new STEAM lab. And that's probably the kids' best part of the project. Even though everybody thinks the gym is the coolest.
And maybe what's the coolest is that you could pull off both, right? The creative side and the health and wellness mm-hmm. side. And as we all know, they all work together, right? To make a better, build a better person. That NBA was awesome. But you have community partners that you work with all day long, every year too.
Absolutely. Including other community centers. So a lot of people may think that my colleagues, the other community centers and I don't collaborate. We work together all the time. Mm-hmm. We actually meet monthly. We share ideas. We go after funding together. We're working on some really cool projects. We took care of the city of Indianapolis. I'm very proud of that project. When we were doing the rental assistance program during the pandemic, it took all 12 community centers plus the Urban League. So 13 of us came together to make sure that families that were facing eviction and homelessness during the pandemic, we were getting those rent funds out immediately. It was a very proud project and a proud moment and a big partnership that took place. And we, not one center could have did it without being able to be a joint collaboration. So those types of things are like really important. We partner with the Indiana Diaper Bank because Crystal Moore House has a diaper boutique where families in the neighborhood who are struggling to get diapers and wipes and WIC and anything an infant would need, they have access to that for free. Mm-hmm. And so without the Indiana Diaper Bank's partnership, we wouldn't be able to do that. It's definitely all types of different collaborations and partnerships.
So I don't think that kind of partnership happens everywhere. Can you talk a little bit about, as a leader, how do you lean in and collaborate with organizations where sometimes you are going to go after the same? They all wanted your MBA grant, right? So talk a little bit about how you manage effective collaboration to achieve a better result.
For me, I think it's just about honesty. And I am always honest with my partners, meaning I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to get out of it. And I'm not going to try to give you rainbows and butterflies that it's all about you. There is some self-serving in us working together as well. And just be upfront and tell me, what are you hoping to get out of this deal so that we can collaborate together? I also think it's not about competition for me. I feel like there are some things that Crystal Moore House does extremely well, and I'm okay with bragging about those. And there are some things that Crystal Moore House struggles and some of my colleagues or the other centers are better at, and I'm okay with reaching out and saying, hey, this is really your lane. You do this a lot better than I do. Mm-hmm. So let's collaborate. I'll bring this to the table because I'm really good at this. And if you bring this to the table, we can dominate the west side of Indianapolis. And that's how the conversations go. And they're like, it's a good thought. Like, if I stay in my lane, you stay in your lane, we come together and all the lanes are full.
So how do you effectively communicate with the west side of Indianapolis? You have stakeholders that are broad, 99 to babies, right? Mm-hmm. How do you communicate with them to make sure that you're serving them in the way they want to be served?
All different types of ways. It gets interesting. So for my people that are social media, we have a big social media page. We Instagram, we Facebook, we do all of those things. We send out flyers to my old school people that like to have the paper in their hand.
Sure.
Because believe it or not, like I'm in that cross between. Like I understand social media. I use social media, but I'm definitely more a pen and paper type of girl. My staff always laughs about my office supply order. We order completely different. What they order versus what I order. They're like, you still use post-it notes? Just pin it in your phone. I'm like, no, I need to see it written down. I want to be able to write a line through that and check that off that I accomplished that. And just knowing that different people learn different ways and making sure that I'm trying to tap in all avenues. I attend meetings when I can. If I'm not personally able to attend, I make sure that a Crystal Moore House staff is able to attend neighborhood meetings, community meetings. I respond to emails. So yes, I just, all different types of ways, communicate. I just feel like I probably sometimes over-communicate, but communication is the key. It doesn't leave really much room for misinterpretation if you're communicating your intentions and you're being very intentional with how you communicate with people.
Sure. So what's next? What's next for the Crystal Moore House?
What's next?
Got so many good things coming up.
So many good things brewing. So in February of 2023, we closed on a new building at 2621 West 16th Street. I'm very proud of that building because Crystal Moore House went from an organization that did not have a reserve fund to being in a position where we could financially purchase a building. And now we are diligently working to raise the rest of the funds to remodel that building. That building will be specifically for my senior citizen population so they can have somewhere that's their own that they can call home. And then our health and wellness department will use the building sometimes in the afternoon when my senior citizens aren't in the building. It's about close to a $3 million project, and we are more than halfway there, raising what we need to raise to make sure that project happens. I hope to break ground on construction in October and ready to open it to the public at the end of first quarter of 2025. So that has me engulfed right now. That is definitely taking over all of everything that I have while still maintaining and growing and increasing capacity on all of the other projects and programs that we're doing.
So if people want to help, how should they help?
Oh, that's a great question. So if you would like to help with a financial donation, we are always willing to take those. You can donate specifically to our new project, our Senior Annex project. You can always donate to any of our other initiatives, like our diaper boutique. Another way that you can give, if you're just not in a financial position, we understand that, is your time. It's a gift. It's a priceless gift that once you give it to us, you can't ever get that back. And so we definitely always are looking for volunteers to come in and tutor our after school kids, help our senior citizens by helping plant gardens or clean up their yards. You can volunteer by coming to help us clean up the Crystal Moore House yard. You can get involved if you are creative and you're an artist and you want to teach young people. There is always space for you to be able to donate your time and or your money.
You'll take either. All right. So I've got two questions that I ask everybody to close out. One, because I'm trying to figure it out myself, and the other, because I'm just building out my book list. So the first question, how do you take time to take care of yourself? What are the keys to continuing to be able to do this for the next 20 years?
So two things that I do. One is travel. You may run into me at the airport. You may run into me on a road trip. I love to travel and go. And it's sometimes just small, like little weekend getaways. My travel is based on food. I'm a foodie. So where I go is dictated by restaurants a lot of the time, food
Excellent.
Trucks. So yeah, so my travel and food thing. And then my next thing is crafting. Mm-hmm. I like to craft. I like to create things. I am that mom that has the Cricut. And I am, even though I'm a CEO and executive director, I will craft my daughter's cheer team gifts in a heartbeat. I will whip out that Cricut and my press machine, and that's my thing. I'll put my music on, and by the time I'm done, I'm like, wow, I did not know I had it in me. But it just, it clears my mind, and it gives me time to come up with ideas on how I'm moving forward next in like different areas of my life.
That's awesome. All right. And then my last question, I'm always looking for people's favorite books or the book they're reading right now. Now, I should caveat for our listeners that Crystal Moore House runs one of my favorite events every single year, which is the Book and Authors Luncheon, which is just a fabulous gap. It sold out in what, 45 minutes this year?
45 minutes.
How many people were there?
More than 800
people were bringing authors from around the world, really, to talk about what they're working on, talk about their new book. It's a fabulous fabulous event. So it's maybe not fair to ask what you're reading now, but I'm going to put you on the spot anyway. Yep. I say, what would you recommend that people pick up and read?
Okay. So one book is the last book that I read, and it's The Gift of Imperfection. And I like that book for several different reasons. Birth orders matter. Mm-hmm. People say that they don't, but they do. If you have siblings or if you have a child, just pay attention to their birth order and what they go on to achieve in life, because they sometimes align way more than we think. So The Gift of Imperfection, I'm a firstborn. Mm-hmm. I'm a type A personality. So if you read that book, you'll understand like why it spoke to me. And my favorite book probably of all time is definitely a twist. I'm grounded in my faith. I believe in God. So this book is called Becoming the Woman God Created You to Be. Mm-hmm. Diane Hagee. So that's what it is. A King's Daughter, Becoming the Woman God Created You to Be. And Diane Hagee is a great speaker. If you've never heard of her, you should watch some of her like little YouTube videos. But that was really instrumental into as I was transitioning from a college kid to becoming an adult, like a full-fledged, a wife, a mother, a working world person. So A King's Daughter was a really good one. And The Gift of Imperfection is definitely probably in my top 10 list.
Awesome. Those are brand new suggestions to the list. So we'll add them in. Thank you so much for sharing. And to all our listeners, thank you for listening to Luminate, Navigating the Unknown Through Creative Leadership. LaToya, thank you for spending time with me today. It's a joy, as always. To learn more about the Crystal Moore House and the impact they carry in Central Indiana, visit KristaMooreHouse.org. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so that you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Schmidt Associates. And until next time, keep navigating the unknown with creativity and confidence.